You are listening to the Coming Up for Air podcast hosted by Air Moms Lori McDougall and Annie Highwater. This podcast is sponsored by AlliesInRecovery.net. Coming Up for Air brings together two wonderful people, both of whose adult sons are in recovery from opiate addiction. Annie Highwater and Lori McDougall have both been through years of their loved one's active addiction. They've experienced all the difficult emotions, the guilt, the anger, the fear, the shame, the exasperating arguments, highs and lows, crises, and relapses. They have come to understand the direct link between taking care of yourself and being able to help your loved one. They have shepherded their loved ones toward treatment. Their sons are both in recovery today. During these conversations, Lori and Annie address the questions and concerns brought up by Allies in Recovery members. And now, Coming Up for Air with Lori McDougall and Annie Highwater.
And tonight's topic is going to be dealing with trauma. Yes. So you have a social experiment that you...
Yes, actually, I just started out kind of doing research about the topic, and okay. I kind of thought, you know, what exactly is trauma? And I thought about what it means to me, and then I was, I just decided I would try to find a definition of it. So I spent the week, I sent messages and texts and emails, and then I asked people in public from every age group and all walks of life just this question: what is your definition of trauma? And the answers I got were not ever alike. A couple of words were the same. Not one answer was the same. They varied. They were incredibly personal and passionate, or funny, or just very revealing about human nature. So I just wanted to read those to you. I got over 100 responses.
Okay.
So, but I just picked a few to read and a few that are kind of generalized.
Okay.
So basically, one person said, drama is some they would either identify it as an event or a person. So one person said drama is someone who sees negative worst case scenarios in all things. Another one said drama is someone who naturally overreacts to very little stimulus. Another person said, this was a person who works in the technical field, people being annoying. The next person is a retired mother, and she said, drama is a blown-up, exaggerated version of life events. The next person works in human resources, and I think they wrote this from a handbook. Unnecessary conflict caused by rumors, hearsay, and gossip, which results in a lot of wasted time and energy for all parties involved.
I like that one.
Yeah. The next person was a carpenter, and he said, drama is unneeded frustration.
Yep.
I started realizing that people were answering according to what they're bothered by. Started really observing that.
Uh-huh.
So then it just kind of became powerful. One person said, he works in law enforcement, drama is people at work who constantly need to be up the boss's butt. I'm reading these verbatim. Well,
was he the boss?
Must not. I don't know. I said, okay, I'll take it. Another person, a computer programmer, said drama is an unnecessary emotional response to a situation, a response that stimulates negative or unwanted excitement and emotions in others. Another person that works in finance and sales said, when I have to go to the bathroom really bad in a meeting.
Okay.
That can be dramatic. Jay, who works in finance, says, people bickering back and forth is drama, especially in my presence, especially family bickering back and forth in my presence. Another tech worker said, the TV show Jersey Shore. And I said, boy, you don't have a lot of drama in your life.
No, I guess not. Either that or he deals really well with the drama.
Right. Which that show is drama. And yeah. Then a vice president of communications said one word, emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Another person that works in computers said, trouble. I stay away from drama. I get away from anyone associated with it. Drama brings nothing but trouble. So not really a definition, just kind of his take on it. a firefighter said, any situation that causes my stress and anxiety to my stress and anxiety level to escalate unnecessarily. And the word unnecessarily is one that repeated over and over, something unnecessary. It was almost like people were saying, you have enough to deal with. Any added unnecessary upset is drama. A designer said, people making a big deal out of nothing. An HR worker, anyone who disrupts a situation for self-acknowledgement. Another designer said, people freaking out about little things. A retail architect told me, the true definition would be a play or the theater, but now we think of it as craziness. A person who is a hot mess. A media representative said, high emotions. A homemaker said, people who complain about a situation they created themselves. One wife said, her husband has a high-pressure job. The silent treatment.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I said that's
a good one, right?
That's a very good one.
Drama, yeah.
And it creates drama.
Yeah, it does.
The problem worse.
It does. That's upsetting. Yeah.
I loved that.
Yeah.
And a high school student said, "People making a big deal over little things." An artist said, "A distressing situation that causes intense anxiety." Another woman said, office gossip. The head of an architecture firm I spoke with said, lots of anxiety would be drama for me. People who are bat crap, you know that term, crazy, over nothing.
Yeah.
A medical administrator said, when I think of drama, I think of constant turmoil. Everything always being an ordeal. A big ordeal is made of everything. A restaurant manager said, people who bring up politics on social media. A creative artist said, people who stir the pot and create drama. A teacher said, when people make their problems mine, especially money related, that's drama.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. A banker said, when an ex talks about their issues with you in front of your kids, that's unfair drama. I don't think anyone's ever in the right to do that. A sales rep said, when someone publicly has a disagreement with another person, that disagreement then entangles other people as the parties try and back up their arguments. This drama leads to more drama, leading to uncomfortable situations for all. And pushing on that a little bit further, I found out this was a Facebook argument between family members that went off the rails and everybody got involved and heated and opinions came out that maybe you didn't know someone had about you, and people took a chance to kind of jump on board and pile on, which is, I've seen a lot of drama there. Another person sent me a Facebook status that their brother had posted that morning that was very personal. And he said, this is drama.
Okay.
I really like that. And a representative from HR said, teenage girls. A marketing accountant said, confusion.
I find that interesting. Teenage girls, not teenage boys, but teenage girls.
Right. Well, probably reacting sometimes to teenage boys, but yeah.
But also, I mean, teenage boys can be pretty drama ridden.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not acknowledged as much.
Something I thought was interesting about that answer was this person, it was a woman, has a baby and no teenagers in her home. And I wondered, are you involved in a teen group, a youth group, or did you have a bad teen experience? I thought that was really interesting. I didn't push on that too, but that was her. I thought it would be staying at home with a baby or something like that. So I thought that was really, really interesting. And then there was some one word answers. One person said confusion. A pharmaceutical rep said backstabbing. A psychologist said overreacting. A few responses were just somebody's name. One attorney smiled at me and said, I don't have a definition for drama. And I took that as, you're never going to know what bothers me. Perfect response from an attorney.
Yeah, right.
A sales rep said, would it be a play? And then my favorite answer came from a young up-and-coming professional man who said, drama to him would be defined as chaotic energy. Or in other words, a conversation with his mom. And that was my son. I told him I support it, even though he was joking.
That's
he
funny.
He tends to be more drama than me. But he said pretty much it's chaotic energy. But I did find that people tended to personalized drama by what bothers them. And in some cases, if they didn't have a clear definition, just a reaction to it, they tended to be somebody maybe embroiled in it often. And then there were even a couple of people that I pitched the question to that have had a lot of issues in their life that sometimes, you know, just I'm aware on the outskirts of things that they've caused. And they would just really acknowledge that they hated it, but didn't identify it.
Right. So
really interesting to me. It was really, really interesting. And then I wanted to give my definition. I defined it as chaos and conflict, unending upset, creating trouble where there is none, extending conflict versus resolving it and finding peace, disliking or attacking someone without solid reason, conflict for the sake of conflict, disruption of peace. And my closest friends kind of identified it as that. Well, I know that's kind of big, but I think it's unnecessary to use that word again. Unnecessary stress and conflict, because that is very stressful. Mm-hmm. And you can pull that into like the addiction realm. And then I just have two more. One is Webster's, because I wanted to get clear.
Yep.
In literature, drama is the portrayal of life or character or to tell a story, usually involving conflict and emotions. It's typically designed for theatrical performance, a movie or television performance, or drama can be a state, situation, or series of events involving interesting or intense conflict of forces. Example, drama of this past week, somebody as describing, or maybe one is dealing with family drama. And then finally, I asked a head of a family recovery site, she's an advocate for families in recovery, what her answer would be for drama, since she deals with so many families. And she said, boy, that's a loaded question first. But then her answer was, it's an emotional reaction in far excess of what is truly warranted.
Okay. Okay.
And that's my research. So what, getting into the subject, would be your definition?
I think that in hearing all of this, I think that definitely what the psychologist, is that the last definition that you gave, was a psychologist?
It was an advocate for families in recovery.
Okay, so
that deals with addiction and recovery.
I definitely identify with that. I think it's this emotion, an overly emotional response to a situation that doesn't warrant that much emotion. And I think that drama is an indication of insecurity, a lack of feeling heard, and a lack of hearing others.
Ah, I like all of that. That's true. That's a deeper, that's beyond the surface of it. That's true. It's definitely an insecurity is true. And sometimes it's fear, or fear of shame,
yeah,
or fear of lack, fear of competition, fear of loss, fear of being, you know, undone or replaced, or fear of whatever could happen. I think that's what creates drama.
Right, right. And I think in these crises situations that we find ourselves in, that's exactly what drama is a response to these emotions that we feel. And it's an over-the-top reaction to these emotions that we're feeling in the middle of this crisis.
Right.
And I don't think we even realize we're creating drama where it's not really warranted.
No, I think there's, one thing I had kind of discovered is when you're surging at 80% or above emotionally, fear, whatever, you can be drama. And there are some people who they can become drama. And then there are some people who are drama. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Like there are some people who can be rude or who can be jealous, but then there are some people who are rude and are always jealous. And there, I think there's quite the difference. I think it comes down to intent and motive and pattern and self-awareness.
Right. Yeah. That's really good. Some people are drama. Yes.
Right.
I agree. They are. I do think that all of it is driven by feelings. Of course, I'm a firm believer that everything we do and say is driven by how we feel.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. I just had this thing happen this past week, actually, on Facebook.
Oh, goodness.
And there was all this drama involved. And on my part, really unintentional. But I was amazed at how, I guess, a lot of assumptions. There was a lot of, like, I find that this happens, it happens in emails, and it happens on Facebook with postings or when you're talking to somebody. And I think it's because we can't emote. We can't, or we can't see each other's emotions. We can't get those body cues or those facial cues.
Well, plus you can be a little bit more brave when you're not face to face or even over the telephone.
And right. I agree.
Based on how you, what you think is, what you read into a person's motive or meaning.
Right.
From the hip.
Right. And that. I know, like, I absolutely hate writing out emails or writing these big long posts. So I send these short, sweet things, and sometimes I read them back and I realize, oh my gosh, you know, it sounded really short. So the person reading it has got to be looking at it and thinking, well, what does she mean by that? You know, is she in a bad mood? Is she, you know, when maybe my intention was nothing at all, I'm just sending you a quick message, you know.
Yeah, sometimes I can find myself reading, the voice I hear in my head when I'm reading a text is very snotty. Or if their punctuation isn't enthusiastic, I can make them sound very monotone and uninterested, or almost like they're, yeah, okay, see you later. You can assume quite a bit.
Right. But, and I'm also seeing, a ton of drama happening on Facebook with politics.
Yeah, and there's always been I think I see a lot of it more in people our age than even my son's age. And that is something I steer clear from. I don't put too much, I don't share too much, and I absolutely don't ever put my opinions. I won't have an argument online. I don't put anything that's super personal. I mean, I know I wrote a book about things that were very personal, but I wanted to disclose dysfunction and addiction. I don't want you in my personal life. You know, I don't think it's wise or healthy for anyone if you are putting it all out there.
Right. And that's actually kind of what happened was a friend of mine, and actually a friend from a long time ago, she lives quite a distance away from me now. And we were having a political conversation on Facebook. But it was nice. I mean, we were on two total different opposite ends of belief systems, but it wasn't a bad conversation. It was, I see this. Oh, yeah, well, I see this. Well, oh, geez, well, you know what? You're my friend and whatever. It was really good. But I found that any time she and I did that, other people would come on and start interjecting in the middle of our conversation, and they would start with insults. They would, they would really, really kind of.
And it becomes a dispute.
Right. And then, I really went to great efforts not to engage. I was like, no, I'm not going to do this. I just focused on my friend and that was it. But then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, actually what happened was one of them started following me on Facebook. So, like, I would go and talk to somebody else clear across the other side of the country, and this person ended up showing up on their posts.
Oh.
Right? So, so my thoughts were, well, I've got to make it stop. He's going to stop following me. So what I did was I unfriended my friend. So, and what I meant to do was send her a message just saying, hey, I unfriended you, but if you and I, if we ever want to talk, let's just message each other outside of Facebook, because I also think it's better if we don't have a public political conversation between the two of us, right?
That's sometimes asking for trouble.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what my thoughts were. You know what? If we're going to talk about this and do it in a civil manner, why don't we just have a conversation outside of Facebook? But what I forgot to message her, and she sent me a really not so nice message that she couldn't believe that I had unfriended her.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And it was like, no, no drama.
Right.
No drama. That was not my intention. I meant to, life just got past me. I forgot to message, you know.
Yeah.
Let's just, you know, go back to square one. And it worked out and everything, but
That's like the heart palpitations, anxiety type of drama, because it's like, no, this is a misunderstanding, or there's assumptions and right. I can't catch this. And you know, you've got work to deal with and family and all these right. other things. And it is, again, the added unnecessary stressful situations.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. I had a lot of that. I really pounded into my son's head when he was a teenager. Don't put your personal life, your personal opinions, don't put that we're on vacation. Don't put in maybe later when we're home. Don't put your opinions about your family if you're mad. Don't put what's going on with a girlfriend. Don't argue with a friend. Don't join in with friends that are arguing against somebody. Do not do that. And we always have this thing where if we're in a crisis or a conflict, we'll take the icons off our phone and not even go into it, because I don't even want to be tempted in a moment of weakness or when I'm fearful or afraid or in pain or whatever the case may be, and something shows up that rubs me raw. I don't want to be tempted to passive aggressive respond, because I'm going to regret it. So I've never really walked in that kind of behavior. I've always kept it pretty private.
I think, to be honest with you, I would love to get rid of like Facebook altogether. The only problem with getting rid of it is there's a lot of things that I do on it that keep me, well, the first reason why I started with Facebook was because I was able to, when my kids went off to college, I was able to FaceTime with them for free. So it gave me a nice way to communicate with them. But now, you know, it's gotten built up so much. I have so many friends, but I'm also, it's a great way to stay connected with, like employment. I know it sounds strange, yeah, but
it is, if you use it for the right reasons. I'd heard, I think, right. I can't remember if it might've been Dr. Drew or Adam Carolla or somebody on a podcast said, in this day and age, after this many years and all the things that have happened, if you are still updating, you know, every hour on Facebook or Twitter or whatever right. the case may be, especially with your personal stuff, especially if you're getting heated on a regular basis, you're just telling the world you're unstable.
Right. Well, and my thing is like, if I see someone posting something on Facebook that I don't like, or I don't feel like seeing, I just block them. I'm like, you know what? I'm just you know,
I'm not going to jump into it.
Right. And they have every right. That's my feeling. They have every right to post whatever they want on Facebook. And I really don't have the right to go on and I don't know, and start, actually, maybe I do have the right, if it's because it's so public or whatever, to go on and start posting my own opinion. But to be honest with you, I don't want the drama. So I just thought, okay, I'll just block them, you know? And then I also find if I have people, a lot of people, I actually have family members that have posted some pretty nasty things on my daughter's Facebook page and my Facebook page.
Deal with that.
I just don't even
look at it. Sometimes we'll call each other and say, can you believe this? No, it's embarrassing. It's rude. Right. It's upsetting. I can't even deal with that. I won't engage it. I'll get rid of it. Put it out of my sight. And if it continues, I have to, even if it's not toward me, if it's instigating people or putting craziness out there, I can't see it. I don't want to be associated with it. I cannot handle that.
Right. And that's what, that's how I feel. I'm like, okay, fine. Block them. Block them.
Done. Moving on.
You're done. It's over. Yeah. We're done.
It's a waste of time.
It is.
A waste of time and energy, and it's embarrassing. So,
right.
I wanted to bring up like how you have moments of urgent drama when your kids are active in their addiction, especially in the beginning, you know, when you're not realizing that certain things are tactics, pressure tactics or whatever the case are, denial tactics, defense mechanisms. I don't know what you, I know you guys, your son had some problems growing up. My son and I really did not have drama prior to when he got addicted. We really didn't. We had normal skirmishes that came up here and there, things that we put consequences on, normal grounding, things like that. A couple of times he had stepped out, tried to rebel or, you know, tried to experiment drinking or whatever. We quickly jumped on that and brought it back to positive. We weren't like just putting a hammer down. But the drama exploded so bad when that happened. That's what I always say. That was one of the things I knew he was, something was wrong. And if he would relapse, I would always know it's because when there was the presence of conflict, vicious conflict, or it would bring a different type of people around who had kind of a dark presence and didn't look you in the eye. And they were kind of sketchy feeling and acting. And that drama that it brings in, the madness and the people it brings and the circumstances, and I'm sure you dealt with it too. I hear it all the time.
I did, but I think that I did deal with the drama when he was young, right? I did from the moment he was born. I mean, my husband and I talk about him being born just crying. I mean, cried and cried and cried as a baby, and it didn't stop. And so I think that I may have, by the time we hit the addiction part of it, I had seen so much drama. It just wasn't even, and so I had really learned to kind of adapt to it. And I learned that I needed to keep my cool, right? That I needed to keep my cool. I needed to be as positive as possible. I needed to not get entangled in it. So I may have had a little bit of a leg up by the time the addiction rolled along, right? Yeah,
you had kind of like a pre-warning.
And I know what you're talking about, that drama, but it's the same.
It was a shock with my son, but in my family life with my mom, I can honestly say with her interfering, and that's all in, like, I detail that in my book too. I don't need to go back over every detail, but when she would do such tug of war, interfering, meddling things with my son, mm-hmm. that I can honestly say we probably had words almost every day for years. Mm-hmm. And I would try to write her letters. I would send her flowers. I would send her cards. I would explode. I would say nasty things. I would say nice things. Just, we had words all the time with, why are you interfering? You know, just the consequences she would remove. So I had had all of this conflict, and I didn't realize for years that was because she was in addiction. I didn't realize for years.
Right. But also, I mean, see when I hear stuff like that, right, when I hear that we were, you know, we were doing this day in and day out, we were doing it for years, but it just, what it says to me is you were in crisis, you were fearful, you didn't feel like she heard you.
She wouldn't stop, and she would sneak and lie, and I didn't feel like she would stop. I could get her to stop.
Right.
And it was one thing when it was spoiling a kid.
Right.
Interfering with homework, and then when it's life and death, you're driving him to scary places, giving him money, and keeping secrets from me, and I'm trying, you know, then I can't even explain the misery.
Right. So, and it all goes back to things that we've talked about. So we create the drama. They create the drama as well.
I have a part in it. You have to realize you have a part in it.
Of course you do.
Because I was right and provably right. But I wasn't right in the way I was going about it, or trying to force her to see, no matter how I approached it.
Right. Exactly.
When a therapist finally said, what is she doing different?
Nothing.
Well, yes, right. But you're expecting her to do something different every time you come up with a new formula. She's just being herself. You're the one who's got to change. You're the only one. You're the one that's sick too. And I realized I was just as sick. I was trying every day to get across to her that was not, it was quicksand.
Right. Exactly. So really it all comes back to, what we've already talked about. It comes back to we're reacting to a situation, not responding. We're fearful. We're trying to force an outcome. We're being manipulative ourselves because we want a particular thing. We have a goal, right? We have a goal in mind. We need to get her to stop sending my son money or whatever it is, but we're trying to force the situation. Right. And I also think in crisis situations like this, I think that we as participants become desensitized to drama, as well as we become incredibly comfortable in drama. So when it starts to stop, when we start changing the situation, And like, let's just for example, I see this happen a lot where our loved one goes off to treatment and the drama level drops to almost zero.
Yeah.
Because they're not around.
So the and chaos we is gone, upset.
Right. And we become incredibly uncomfortable and lost. And,
you know, I said that in one chapter at the end of my book, as I said, once I didn't have something to be upset about every day, I caught myself discovering new things to be upset about.
Right.
I was so used to that level of adrenaline and upset that I would recreate it. And I had to catch myself and say, calm this down. Don't, you know, be like, blah, every time.
Right.
If something happens, you know, work related, that's not an issue, but I've been at this level of adrenaline for so long.
Right. And you've had to be right. Exactly. You've had to be at a heightened level because, you have to be at this high on a high tension wire, like just doing this balancing act. You're waiting for what hammer is going to hit next. Right. What's he going to hit me with next? How is he going to try and manipulate me? And I've got to be on guard. I've got to be ready. And then they go off and they go away. And you're still on the, you know, you're still walking on the high tension wire, like doing a balancing act. Okay, what now? What now?
Yeah, and now still so easily nothing. Triggered. And that threat is, you know, somewhat removed. I remember sleeping with like my shoes and my coat next to my bed in case I got a call at night. And then for a long time, I couldn't stand when the phone would ring at night. I would freak
out
on my friends that would call me. You better have a good reason. Do not ever call me. You know, I hate this phone ringing at night. You
know I feel the same way, Annie. I'm the same way. My heart literally bursts out of my chest if the phone rings late at night. I'm like, what is it? It can't be good. Right. No one's going to call me at 2:00 in the morning with something good.
I think that's been the meanest I've ever been to anyone close to me is if they've called me late at night when I lived in that level of fear. Even for a couple of years after, I would, what are you doing? You can't do this. You know what I've been, you know.
Right.
You're still in that heightened anxiety.
Right. And also, I think another thing that happened to me once things settled down and I was still walking around all anxious, I think that a form of PTSD settled in because it was weird because that's when my, I started having nightmares really badly.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Things that I couldn't control. And it's almost like, oh, okay. You know, you have nothing to worry about now. I'm going to join in the picture. Remember me or, you know, think about these nightmares now, you know, that kind of, I don't know.
Well, your body reacts chemically, your brain reacts to heightened stress. Your body has memory of that, and it takes a while to calm down and come out of it. And you have to do work to calm down and come out of it. It doesn't go away overnight because you've lived at that level. You have to recover too.
Right. But what else is interesting about the whole drama situation is once I got control over stuff, once I did calm down and I did find that bit of serenity, I wanted more and more and more of it. And so now it makes it so much easier. Like when people are trying to pull me into drama, I'm constantly in my head, I'm like, oh, okay, I've got to find a way to disengage. I've got to figure out how to get it because I don't like this anymore. I don't like these feelings. You know, I don't like the overreacting. I want to just get away from it.
I tend to avoid people who turn an argument into an ordeal. And I can
see
that coming. And the easy triggers. Yeah, I know exactly. I'm so far removed from that now. And I always tell people, because I go to meetings a couple of times a week and I talk to a lot of people now, and I work with the public. I always tell people who are aware of the situation, I don't have active addiction in my daily life. I don't have dysfunction or conflict anywhere around me anymore, other than my normal flaws in life and whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't have chaos and upset. I'm not a mess. I don't have a disaster around me. I'm not a daily upset, adrenaline charged, panicked person anymore. And I haven't been for going on 5 years because I started doing a lot of work before my son left to have good boundaries. And I felt guilty for that for a while because I see and hear so much of that level 10 upset. But then I kind of thought, well, I've spent decades dealing with that, managing it, navigating it, being embarrassed of it, hiding it, trying to work through it, work it out, whatever the case may be. It was a daily mess for me. So having gone this long where it's nowhere near me other than After Effects or if something were to happen in the future, I mean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate peace and calm and lack of drama.
Right. Yeah, I'm the same.
That's my favorite hashtag, save the drama for your llama. I always put that on my Instagram because I don't want it anywhere near me. One thing I was going to say, I was just put a couple little notes here. When I was going through stuff, I tend to be an obsessive researcher, so I would listen to TED Talks and YouTube videos when I was getting ready for work. And sometimes at work, instead of listening to music, I would have those things playing and, you know, psychology, behavioral science. Guy Winch has a really good TED Talk about emotional hygiene, which is kind of like putting yourself in intensive care or checking your emotional health. It's really good talk. And those things kind of helped me learn what I was dealing with and untangle. But one day, I was describing a situation to one of my friends who counsels families, and I was describing a person that's related to my life who has this panic personality. And everything was immediate anger. Immediately, I'll show you who's boss. Immediately, you want to mess with me? This is what you're going to get. And then revenge, and panic and upset, and everything's a feud. And it's just something I had to deal with for a while. And she said, oh, that's histrionic personality disorder. So I was like, I don't never heard of that. She said, well, go home and Google it. So I Googled it, and it describes so much behavior and sometimes moments I've had. And I remember thinking, I'm not going to look at anything like this for a while. I'm going to go take a nap. I can't look at psychology or textbooks because some of this behavior is so textbook and not individual that it's kind of freaking me out that people can be classified like this. But then I looked at that stuff kind of later, and I noticed that certain personality types, you know, are examples of this and were drawn into my life just because of what I was born into. And histrionic is a very real thing. That's it means prone to hysteria, prone to that drama. And that really showed me I had a lot of that in my life, and I would go dark with it. I would go crazy with it. I would react with it, or I would isolate and melt down and analyze and try to figure out, how am I going to resolve this? How can I get to peace? How can I fix this? And you can't. Right. So I'm as sick with it, whether I was being drama or affected because someone is drama, if that makes sense.
Right. That's interesting. I'll have to look that up. Histrionic.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Histrionic personality. It's definitely, you'll probably recognize it. So,
okay.
Or having dealt with it. It's definitely very interesting. A lot of it related to just arguments I had with my mom. And I'm not trying to diagnose anybody, but
Yeah, right.
If the shoe fits and there's a pattern, I want to know what steps to take to have peace. And I certainly can't go crazy working it through with someone else. Sometimes I got to go home and work it out with myself and avoid that.
Right. Right. I like that philosophy. I have to go home and work it out with myself.
Right. And that's their stuff. I'm not going to sit and tell somebody, well, you're being nasty, and then just keep escalating with them. That's their stuff to work out.
Right.
I can either stand there and do it a healthy way or walk away and do it a healthy way. I can't make them work it out.
Right. When I come across a situation like that, like, I try and talk in terms of like how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And why. And I try not to point the finger at them. I try not to, you know, accuse people of anything. I just try and tell them how I feel.
Yeah.
I follow one of AA's sayings: say what you mean what you say, but don't say it mean. So right. I try and do that. I try and tell you, okay, this is how I'm feeling. This is why I'm feeling this way. And then whatever you want to do with it, you can do with it.
Right.
And I find some people will step back and they'll, you know, they'll try and acknowledge my feelings. Other people won't. And okay, if you won't, you won't.
Right. I still have to be okay. I still have to be at peace. I'm not going to be crazy. I'm not going to have a public scene. I'm not going to have an argument. I'm not going to name call. I'm not going to do conflict. I'm not going to be talked and bullied out of my decision. If I change my mind, it's one thing. I'm not going to change it because you're pressuring me.
Right.
Those things. So I do look at what triggers upset within me. And a lot of times it's fear of conflict or fear of, you know, having somebody turn on me or whatever the case may be. Your mind kind of exaggerates it. And that tends to trigger the upset in me.
Right. And also, just for the record, I'm not awesome at it all the time.
No.
Right? It can get messy.
No, I'm still trying to come into balance because I veer between doormat and overly crazy defensive.
Right.
I own if I need to. I wait too long to defend myself and then it's ferocious.
Right.
So I just want to be in between the middle where I'm stable. I will step up and defend myself if I want to, but I'm not going to take every argument offered.
Right.
That's trauma.
Yep. I agree.
I have one method. When my dad was in hospice, we knew I was going to go into my 30s fatherless. So he was kind of trying to do these best practices of here's advice about this and protect yourself with that and always be aware. And one of the things we came up with was, what am I going to do when you're facing hard times? You know, what do you do then? You don't have a dad to call. And I'm not close to my family or my mom. I don't really have a mom to call. So we came up with this plan that whenever there was drama or whatever bad adversity happened, set a goal immediately and melt down, face it, go to therapy, handle it. Don't deny it. Don't distract yourself from it, but set a goal. So when he died, when he went into hospice, I set a goal. The first thing I did was I'm going to run a marathon in response to you dying. And that same year, my husband and I had gotten divorced. So here I'm introducing my son to death and divorce at the same time. So I took him with me on all of this training run, but I decided I will set a goal every time drama or crisis hits. If somebody is nasty to me in some kind of an attacking way, sabotaging way, conflict way, whatever, if it's family or whatever it is, I'm going to set a goal. And the nastier the attack, the bigger the goal. I'm going to run a half marathon if somebody is evil to me. And then it really just pulls your mind off of them and you're almost thankful for them. You have an accomplishment because of them.
Right. So
we set that goal or we set that strategy in place a long time ago. And I'm telling you, I have gone on vacations because of that. I have done great things for myself because of it. I've taken classes. I've gotten more education. I've run so many 5Ks and another marathon since then. And that to me, other than getting down in the mud with somebody or falling apart when a crisis hits and deciding that's what I'm left with, setting a goal right in the midst of it is what will lift you out of it. And by the time you're over it and through it, you've got accomplishment too.
Very good. Very good. I like
that. That's my response to drama.
I'm going to have to try it.
Yeah. My sister had called me the other night and somebody had been really mean to her. I think it was on Facebook too. And I said, set a goal right now. Set a really big goal, a really, really big one. And she makes these artistic things. And I said, make 10 of them and plan on selling them for this much. It's a really lofty goal in a short amount of time. Now go fall apart. So she's a couple days later, she's like, I made my first one. I did it. And, I did fall apart and felt so terrible, but oh my goodness, look at what came out of that. So it really is a powerful way to respond to negativity.
I'll have to give it a whirl.
Yes. So that's that response. And then I know craft, you're a lot more familiar than me. What does craft tell you to do about drama?
Oh, craft is Kraft talks about drama, maybe not using that word, but disengage, right? It's all about do not engage in that kind of behavior, because really when you do engage, you're engaging in addiction.
Oh yeah.
That's what you're doing. You're engaging in addiction. So disengage, only engage in positive behavior. Only reward the positive behavior. And if you stay engaged, you're rewarding them for creating drama.
Yeah, and it just feels like, I mean, I feel like I drink poison sometimes if I engage. It's like, oh, I feel so gross inside.
You can't
even
be
a part of it.
And it doesn't accomplish anything.
It just makes everyone feel terrible. And if you get lured into an argument, even if you are 1,000% right and you have CSI evidence proving it, when you are arguing with somebody who is just arguing to argue, they win.
Right.
Even if you're in a position that you are victorious and justified, they win. There's no winning. There's
And I don't even, when we're talking about substance use disorder, I don't even think about it as the person wins. I think about it as the disease wins.
Yeah.
Right? The disease. Right. And you will never ever win against the disease.
You will never win it. You won't figure it out. You won't conquer it. You won't beat it. You won't outsmart it. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and you will never beat it.
Right. So disengage, move away from it.
Right.
Only engage in good behavior, good conversations, only reward and be present and be a part of moving away from substance use.
Right. Dominique asked us to include the concept of what drama should we steer clear of when it comes to our kids. Some examples might be court cases, you know, criminal problems or whatever, consequences, their relationships, friendships, their conflicts, their recovery. What is your opinion on all of that?
I tend to agree with her, and I, right. you know, I totally agree with it. You know, just let them deal with it, the consequences themselves.
I agree, and you see a lot of people that get right in the middle of it and get as dramatic as the situation or argue with the friends or whatever the case, argue with the girlfriend, whatever the case may be. They're just as bad as the situation when you do that. It's not solving anything to be like that.
Right, and I wouldn't do it for my other children, right? Like, I don't do it for my other children. I'm not in the middle of their relationships with other people. I'm not... I'm not going to court for my daughters, or I'm not, I just don't.
And undoing their consequences, if you undo your child's consequences, even if they're an adult, you rob them of a life lesson that they need to learn.
Right.
You absolutely do. And I got involved in friendships and kind of monitored relationships and stuff when my son was a minor. But once he became 18 and older, it took a while to kind of get used to him being 18. And their attitude the day they turn 18 is, well, I'm 18.
Yeah.
No, but it takes you a little bit longer. But prior to 18, I did get involved and monitor a lot of things. And I was pretty hyper insane about staying on top of it all and trying to govern that because he had started going off the rails then. But afterwards. But I got involved in his recovery a little bit because my fear was still running the show when he went. And if I detected any signs, I would turn into a detective.
I did that. Yeah.
That's just, that's continuing the madness.
Yeah, I did that. But I had to learn. That was a learning process for me on how to move away from that. And, right. and it was when I started becoming absolutely crazy in my own head.
Right.
That it was like, okay, I can't maintain this. There's no way. But it was a learning process, you know. It was a process where he left, he went to treatment, he came back, right? And then he went back to treatment, and it was, okay, if he comes back, I'm not going to do these things. You know, I mean, I was doing some crazy things like looking up the telephone bill and calling the numbers that I knew he was calling, right? And now I'm just like, you know what? If that's what you want to do, I wasn't able to stop him then. What makes me think I'm going to, it's just a waste of my time. It's a huge waste of my time.
Too, where, like, at first I think you need to investigate and find information, but eventually you get to a point where you're getting sick with that. And you know, when that's over and information needs to come to you instead of you getting sick, seeking it out, you kind of, and you feel the shift. It's like the song has ended. Right. I found out all I needed to know. Now this continuing of investigating is just making me sick. The information has to come to you at some point.
Right. Because the other thing about, I remember thinking in terms of, I don't know. I have to be able to prove it to him that I know he's using, because he's going to deny it. But if I have the proof, right, if I have this overwhelming proof, he won't deny it.
Right.
It, which is totally ridiculous. And who do I need to prove it to? If I think he is, and I have signs that he is, then... And I just kind of got to this point where it was like, if I think he's lying to me, he's probably lying to me. If I think he's using, he's probably using. If I, you know, and it's like, and you know what? That's the information that I'm going to go on.
Right.
That's what
it will come to you. It does come to you. It does reveal itself, especially if you're praying and believing a higher power, things get revealed. And I again, definitely stress it's different when they're a minor. I think they should be all over their social media and aware of everything.
Right.
Especially if you're suspecting drug use, and once they become older or go off into treatment, then you really, there's not really anything you can do, and you're going to make yourself sick trying. I remember my son as a minor, when he was in high school, he had this girlfriend, and I remember being in my bedroom cleaning a mirror, and I heard this screeching sound, like a screaming. And I went out in the living room, and he had his ear, his phone propped on his ear, on his shoulder, and he's playing a video game. And I could hear this girl screaming and cussing. So I was like, hang up the phone. So he said, what was that about? And he told me all her issues. And she was screaming and cussing while he's playing video game. And I said, you don't live in a home like that. You've never, he can tell you to this day, he never one time saw his dad and I argue. I didn't talk about his dad. We made a pact and we stuck to it. We will not fight in front of him, and we will not trash each other to him ever, not one time. And I think that gave him a lot of peace and freedom that we didn't. So I said, why would you think this is acceptable? You have never been in the presence of a screeching, cussing, screaming, hysterical woman. And he gave me her reasons. And I remember saying, she might have a reason, but she doesn't have a right. Right. You know, no one has a right to act insane. I don't care if they have a reason. No one has a right to call you names and scream and threaten right. you. And I was so thankful, even at his young age, that hit home. And it right. didn't last much longer. And he's never been in a screaming. He's not been a screamer himself.
Right.
He didn't have conflict like that other than the panic, urgent chaos of addiction. He's never been in a relationship that involved that, because that to me is about as sick as it gets.
Right.
But I wouldn't monitor that now if he was. I would just say, I'm not sure this is the best choice for you.
Right, right. I have to tell you, my son has been in some really wacky relationships, and I did not, you know, I did not tell him what to do. I listened to him, and, you know, if he asked me my opinion, maybe I would give it to him. Sometimes I wouldn't. You know, sometimes I would answer him with a question with, you know, well, I don't know, what do you think about it? And, you know, and that kind of, but no, I try really hard not to get involved and monitor. And you're right, when he was younger, that's a different situation. He was my responsibility. But then also, because we have power over them, we can do things. So when we talk about them being younger and being and suffering from addiction, well, as parents, you can send right. them to treatment
yes.
against their wishes, right? We can't do that. We can't do right. those things.
Right. Or we don't really even have, even if we have a reason, we don't have a right to right. investigate and be all over them at that. Even if you prove yourself right, there's nothing you can do.
Right.
Once they're adults, right. they're adults. There's nothing you can do.
And I actually find that the less involved I am and the more I'm just there, the more of a message I'm sending to him that I believe that he is capable of taking care of this himself. And I think the better self-esteem that he has
yeah,
and the better chances that he'll make good decisions.
Yeah. The confidence goes a long way.
Right.
Absolutely. I think when they're minors, that kids can be taught to be drama, you know,
yes.
based on your reaction. Like I've always said, if your kid falls down, you do want to make sure they're not hurt, but your reaction indicates their reaction. So if you're like, oh my gosh, come here, let me comfort you, which is really about you kind of
right.
being the mom that's needed. Or if you're chasing down every bully, or if you're right. tell me every person that was rude to you so I can go freak out on them. You can teach kids to live at that high level of drama.
Right.
And I have seen that happen. And I think it's so sickening and selfish.
Right. And I had this philosophy when my kids were growing up that, you know, they would come home. One, they would always tell me, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did this to me or said this about me. And I would always just listen and go, huh. But in the back of my head, it was like, yeah. And what's your part in this? Like, they don't come home. They don't tell you what they did. They only tell you what the other person did. So I'm really only getting one part of the picture. And then my other thing was that if something was ongoing, there was some kind of a problem that was ongoing, I would wait and wait and wait. And then I would ask, well, do you need me to be involved in this? Or would you prefer me to just stay out? And I found that that was when they asked me, nah, I need some help. That was when I needed to step in and that they really didn't want me.
Yeah, I think you I definitely think approaching it calm from the beginning, from the starting gate, is important. I found that sometimes when I rushed to defend or rushed to be outraged, that had more to do with me as much as it did the situation and protecting him. Right. You know, I never felt protected or defended. I kind of always felt helpless and like, you know, dropped in a hornet's nest a lot of times because I had so many people against me growing up. So when it came to him, if I thought there was a small need to, for him to be defended, my instinct was I need to defend him crazy. But I was had enough presence of mind and psychology training in my life to step back and what is my motive? Why am I doing this? Right. Is it helping him if I cuss out a coach, which I've never done, nor would I ever. But if there was a temptation, no, is that right for his mom to go argue with a coach or a teacher or one of his peers? Right. That really is my drama. And that's really setting him up for the future of those high levels of drama and unhealthy relationships.
Right.
And that all leads to dysfunction, and all dysfunction you can find in the presence of addiction, in my opinion.
I agree.
I have just a couple of toxic examples I was given by people who had named particular types of drama. So if you want to just ask yourself, if you have ever encountered or have you ever been this? And of course, you know, I can say when I'm tired or when I'm triggered, I can certainly be petty and I can certainly be drama. Oh.
All of us can.
Yes. So there's passive aggressive type toxic drama. We call them on perpsident type situations with like loaded comments where you act like you don't know what you're saying, but it's really to insult somebody or imply, you know, yourself as superior over them. I've certainly experienced that quite a bit. I don't tend to do that so much. I'm more just aggressive, get it out there.
Yeah.
Passive aggressive makes me insane, and I've endured it a lot where I've just ignored it and then exploded later into who I confide in, but I can't stand it.
Yep.
There are fire starters, people who instigate problems, but you are crazy and you are demanding and difficult because you reacted.
Right.
Those are annoying, toxic drama types. Pot stirrers, which is typically a defense mechanism, people who often feel like they're in trouble or who have come from that type of environment, put someone else in the hot seat to get the heat off themselves. So they're always stirring the pot, kind of whispering around. Backlash drama, when you're standing firm in your boundary or your no, and there's backlash, pressure, well, you should do it. You should say yes. Well, that's because you're this or that.
Right.
There's button pushers. Yes. And then there's the type that lure you to relax and maybe confide in them, and then they turn around and are contrarian and kind of sting you.
Oh, yes. Yep. Yep. Yep.
That's really like where
I have experienced that.
Like you feel like relaxed enough to maybe in a moment you confide or let your guard down and reveal something, and then you get burnt so bad. I can't even explain what that feels like.
Yeah. And I can tell you that has happened to me so often that I have cut people totally off and said no, because I never know when it's coming. And I tend to be on the trusting side of things. So eventually my guard gets brought down, and then wham, I get hit on the side of the head with something.
Yeah. Or if you are sincere that you are caring and you're compassionate and somebody comes across that way, you don't expect them to sting you. But I've absolutely had somebody either take the information I revealed to them and use it against me, or use it against somebody else in my moment of like pain or weakness, or ridicule my circumstances.
I've had all of that. Yep.
All of it. And those are learning processes, because you just have to learn to protect yourself more. But there's moments that I almost feel like, how do you help it when you've got a situation surging or somebody just catches you with a moment of kindness? That really works with me when someone seems kind and compassionate.
Yep.
I don't go around putting it out there for the world. But if I have a moment and someone seems to care, I believe you.
Right. And that's happened to me too. And I've been blindsided by it. And then it's I can't, and then I get mad at myself. I get really mad at myself, because then I'm like, okay, you knew this was coming. Yep. This has happened to you.
You should have seen this based on this person's role in your life.
Right.
Or based on their past history.
Right. And you let your guard down. You let it happen.
It takes a lot to get the heat of that out of you, because it burns so bad for a long time. It's poisoned you for a long time.
Right.
And then there's the nice to mean toxic, where somebody comes across really nice and immediately turns cold and mean following your no. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Actually, I remember one time I was with my brother-in-law buying a car, and this sales manager was so friendly and bubbly and talking the whole time and engaging in conversation, I think about football. And I just happened upon the exchange, or just happened to be there with him. And then the guy asked him if he'd wanted an extended warranty. And my brother-in-law said, oh, no, I'm not interested in that. His whole demeanor changed. So I didn't know if he got, like, extra commission. But he hurried up and just, like, looked angry and sped him through and put him onto the next phase of the sales process. And I remember my brother-in-law saying, did you see how his face changed? His whole personality changed because he didn't have to be nice to me anymore. I was like, oh, my goodness, does that not happen often?
Right.
So I think we've summed up, we've brought some of the manipulation subject into our drama talk too.
We sure did.
It's all been great research. It's been great to learn. I loved connecting with people on this level. If you take time to ask people, what's your definition of drama? And just leave it at that. You will love their responses.
I will give it a whirl. Thank you. And next week, I don't think we have a topic yet, do we?
I thought you said things that are related to the emotions and feelings, maybe like, a lot of people
feelings.
Say.
Oh, yeah. I've got, yeah, that's right. We're going to do feelings. I've got some good topics to cover next week. So.
Yeah, I think sometimes I often hear people say, I don't know what to do with all this anger I feel. And that's definitely a good one to address. So yeah. I will see you next week.
Okay.
We'll come up for air again. Have a great week. Until next time.
Bye, Annie.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this Coming Up for Air podcast with Annie Highwater and Lori McDougall. If you're interested in reading Annie's book, Unhooked, A Mother's Story of Unhitching from the Roller Coaster of Her Son's Addiction, it's available online, or you can simply follow the link at the bottom of one of Annie's blog posts on alliesinrecovery.net. Coming Up for Air is sponsored by Allies in Recovery, the online home for families facing the addiction of a loved one. Allies in Recovery can help you understand your loved one's struggle and offers effective communication strategies that encourage treatment and discourage use. In addition to interactive e-learning, Allies in Recovery offers expert advice, podcasts, tools for evaluating treatment options, recent news items, and access to a large community of families coping with issues similar to yours. Join alliesinrecovery.net today. That's alliesinrecovery, all one word, .net. Thank you for listening. Our theme music was performed and composed by cellist Eric Corey.